WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for joining us. We have been talking about inflation broadly in the economy today, and now we want to shift a little and turn more locally, talk about, in particular, the auto market. Why are car prices so high? What has caused car prices to soar the way they have? How much of this is related to these persistent supply chain issues that began during the pandemic? And what can lawmakers do to smooth out the issues in the auto world? If you have bought a new car in the last year, if you tried to buy a new car in the last year, or if you've bought a used car, you are very familiar with all of the problems there and all of the money that it is costing you that it didn't used to. To help us understand what's going on and maybe what can be done, we've got Jamie Butters with us. He is executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. Jamie, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen.
So let's talk about high prices in the car market. Used car prices are going down now, but for new vehicles, they're way up to 8% over last year. What is the explanation?
You're going to make me say it, aren't you? Supply and demand.
Supply and demand, right?
Supply and demand. There's been a real tight supply of new vehicles really for, you know, 2.5 years, more than 2.5 years after production shut down and demand came roaring back. Consumers couldn't really spend much money on other things. If they were going to get out of the house, they were going to be driving. And so that really added pressure to the car market. There's not enough supply, partly because we missed production for a couple of months, but then the chip shortage, a bit of a self-inflicted wound, but the automakers were trying not to get overextended, and running out of cash is a bad thing, so they canceled some orders of chips, and boy did that turn out to be a bad move because there was huge demand and they just couldn't get, they had to go to the back of the line.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult. We've seen really high prices setting record highs every month. I think $45,000 to $46,000 in October on average, and electric vehicles are even higher priced than that.
And we're still seeing these big lots, I feel like, of cars at auto plants that are just sitting there not being able to be sold because they don't have chips in them. In any business, that kind of backlog would be, of course, damaging to the bottom line. Tell me how the car companies are doing. The prices are higher that they're able to get, but they aren't able to sell as many cars.
They're doing surprisingly well, though. We had, for most of the quarter century that I've been covering the auto industry, dealerships have been full of vehicles. They have more than they can sell. Mm-hmm. A well-run store might have 2 months worth of vehicles on the ground, and a lot of times companies would end up with 3 months or more, and they'd have to discount the vehicles, and profits weren't very high per vehicle. Most auto dealers lost money on new vehicles, but they'd make it up, with service and used cars and such. Right now, with the scarcity, automakers don't have to put big incentives on vehicles. They're selling, everything is selling for sticker price or even a little above. So dealers are making basically record profits. Automakers are making record profits aside from, a few headwinds here and there and the opportunity to write down billions of dollars in losses on autonomous vehicles and things like that. But they're really benefiting from the lack of supply. They're not making vehicles that don't make them lots of money. Everything they make is sells immediately and sells for basically a record high price.
Hmm. So I guess then what's the incentive for the car companies to solve this problem? I mean, the chip problem persists. If they're still able to do well in their business and we're a little inconvenienced, what shakes that loose at some point?
Well, the chance to sell more cars than the other company down the street. Mm-hmm. They make money on every one they sell. If they could get more chips and make more, they would sell more, even to the point where ultimately the profit per vehicle is going to decline. But There's too much opportunity still out there, and everyone is, you know, all these companies, GM, Toyota, Volkswagen, on down the line, are doing everything they can to get as many vehicles out there. They say they're going to be more disciplined. They want to stay, you know, more in that month and a half worth of sales on hand. But the competitive juices always get flowing, and somebody thinks they can make a little more money and boost their stock price a little. They'll do it.
Yeah. I'm talking with Jamie Butters. He's the executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. We're talking about the high price of new vehicles in particular right now, caused by supply shortages. Want to hear from you as well. Are you trying to buy a car right now? Are you somebody who's really frustrated with the high prices of new vehicles? Are you an automotive dealer, or have you tried to have to work in the automotive sector recently? Talk about what this experience has been like for you. What should automakers be doing to try to lower prices? What should the government be doing to make some of these supply chain problems lesser or maybe go away? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter at hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Jamie, we have seen some policy changes that are aimed at least at solving some of these problems. You know, we're gonna make more chips here in America. Congress has made that decision. And of course, there is always the incentive that the government is trying to provide for the automakers to make more electric vehicles. Presumably that eases some of these questions, but maybe it makes it worse. But talk about those two policy initiatives and how soon people would see relief from them.
Yeah, that's the rub. There, you know, it takes a lot of years to build an auto plant, to build a battery plant, to build a mine or mineral refining. And the chip plants, they take a long time. They're very expensive and take a long time to build and get up to speed. So we're probably looking, you know, late this decade. At that point, you know, maybe they'll overproduce and prices will be dangerously low again. But hopefully and presumably what it'll provide is a more stable, you know, more robust, localized supply chain for these really critical components or, you know, subcomponents, going forward into the 30s, as we expect to see EV adoption grow considerably. And we know that the demand for computing power is going to go up, not down. So those all make sense, but they're not anything that's going to help you if you're in the market right now. They're not anything that's going to be a big factor even probably in the next presidential election in terms of the economy, other than the extent that people might see big billion-dollar announcements, you know, state after state, and believe that there are going to be good jobs in the future. They just may not have those specific jobs, you know, yet.
Yeah. I also want to talk about workers and how much more power they have in general in this economy, and whether that is also true in the auto world, and also the relationship between the power that workers have and the prices that people pay for new cars. Is there a tension there as well? And how are workers doing even as, as fewer cars are being sold?
You know, it's a complicated question to answer because you have so many different types of employees. But I mean, let's start with the elephant in Detroit, which is the UAW. Mm-hmm. They had a very good contract 4 years ago, but we did not expect this kind of inflation, right? And so even though, you know, they're earning good pay, and if they're at a plant that can get enough chips, they're working overtime and they're doing well, but they do not feel, I'm sure they do not feel like they are getting ahead. And so like any, you know, union, they're going to be pushing really hard to get to feel like they're made whole in the wake of these, you know, record high inflation numbers. So, or, you know, highest in decades and so on. That's going to put a lot of pressure on these negotiations as the contracts come up this next fall, September 2023. Interestingly, this will be the first time in ages that the U.S. Union and the Canadian Union will be negotiating effectively simultaneously. Their contracts expire at basically the same time. You know, the former Canadian, the Unifor president, Jerry Dias, you know, really wanted that to happen. He felt like they were getting sort of the leftovers. But I don't know, you know, going head to head between the UAW and Unifor, for, you know, which is the union formed out of the merger with the Canadian auto workers and the media workers. But, you know, they're going to be going head to head, and it's going to be really interesting. I would imagine the automakers would try to play one off of the other and get them to not demand such big wage increases or signing bonuses. But I have to believe that the workers on both sides they're expecting to get paid.
Yeah. David on Twitter has an interesting question. He says the rising cost of car ownership is squeezing consumers too. Even used cars are, of course, more expensive these days. He says we cannot afford a second car payment, so we have to get by for the next 2 years until our one vehicle is paid off. The rising cost, not just of autos and auto-related expenses, but everything else also seems like it could slow sales. Even if they could meet demand, in other words, that people just don't have the kind of money to buy a new car and spend on a new car when they're, you know, doubling their grocery bill or their heating bill or other things. What's the relationship there?
Well, and the other big one is the cost of borrowing is going up, you know, because the Federal Reserve is trying to tamp down inflation. So they're making borrowing more expensive. The idea is more on the business side, make it more expensive for companies to build factories, maybe get them to slow down a little. But the upside is if you're trying to buy a home, you know, and house prices, we know, went bonkers and have stayed, you know, incredibly high. If you're trying to buy a home or you're trying to buy a car, the amount of home or car that you can buy is coming down, and it's coming down dramatically. It grows, you know, it's like compounding interest. When the interest rates go up, you know, the ability to stretch is less. And of course, this sense, to the extent that the Fed is trying to bring on or get close to a recession, prices are not going to keep just going up super fast. So it's not like you can, you know, buy a house tomorrow for $1 million and turn around and sell it for 1.2 in 6 months, because that doesn't seem to be the trajectory right at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. It's always great to have you here with us on Detroit Today. Thanks for coming by.
Anytime, Stephen.
Okay, that is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we are going to talk with the new Speaker of the Michigan House of Representatives, Joe Tate. He is the first African-American to be House Speaker. We're going to talk about that and the first time in a really long time that the Speaker comes from the city of Detroit as well. We'll also talk about what agenda the Democrats are going to lay out when they take control of Lansing for the first time in 40 years in January. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.